Apparently, I have been making the harder choice throughout most of my life. At least the one that felt like mine, anyway. Now, whether it was actually the more difficult choice or just the dumber one, I guess that's something that I'm still working out. And I'm not here to tell you that it all worked out great, okay? In some ways, it definitely did not. At least nothing that's going to impress anyone at a dinner party or something. Because, well, the financial picture is, let's call it, impressionistic. However, there are times where I'll find myself thinking about the alternate reality version of myself. This is the version who took the so-called sensible road, made the sensible choices and built a conventional life. But I know that guy would have been miserable in a way that it's difficult to define because it mostly, from the outside, looks fine. Now, that's the kind of miserable that shows up around the age of 45 on a Sunday afternoon, where you glance at your expensive watch and you realize that nothing's technically wrong, but you can't seem to explain to anyone why you feel like you're disintegrating. Okay, so what exactly am I talking about here? So maybe you're the type of person who just doesn't fit very well into the norms of society. So maybe you're an artist or a musician, or you're just someone who looked at the conventional blueprint and thought, I'd rather eat cereal for dinner in a questionable apartment than do that for 40-odd years or whatever. So maybe you're the kind of person who chose depth over stability. Or I guess you could say you chose meaning over security. Though I guess in a perfect world, you'd be able to have all of these things at the same time. And I guess you couldn't make yourself care enough about the acceptable things to play the game convincingly. So this is the life that I chose. Instead, whatever the hell this is exactly. And I guess I'll try to get into a little more detail about that, what that is as we go along here. Now, I suppose from a certain perspective, this is the kind of life that probably it looks like a series of very committed mistakes or something like that, anyway. In any case, I'm still trying to work out whether living and surviving are actually two different things, or whether I've just been telling myself they are for the last 35 or 40 years. Because the other explanation is a little too uncomfortable to sit with before I've had coffee. Speaking of which, excuse me. Right. So here's the thing about accepting this unconventional life. The beginning is usually fine. You're young, you're broke, But there's also this, well, it's like an intoxicating sense of momentum or something. Like you're in the opening scene of a movie. And the suffering has this weird, like romantic quality when you're age 19, because at that age, you're not really suffering yet, right? You're just paying your dues. There's a difference. And it's a very important difference that completely evaporates by around your mid-30s. And then, well, at that point, you're struggling legitimately. So I think the middle, once you reach that point, that's where things get rather interesting. And by interesting, I mean brutal in ways that are hard to explain to people who took the other path in life. Because from the outside, your life still looks like it was a choice. And it is, debatably. It's just that choices seem to have this annoying tendency to keep costing you things long after you've already made them. But here's the thing. Sometimes I get this feeling that I didn't actually choose this life. It chose me. And after all, there's arguably no such thing as free will, right? So at that point, it's just a matter of acceptance. Now, I'm not really talking about anything catastrophic here. This is more like you realize at some point that you've been uninsured for like 4 years or whatever, and you're just hoping that your body gets the memo. And then you do your taxes, and the document comes out the other end looking like something like an abstract piece of art that a moderately depressed person made at 3 in the morning. And somewhere in there, you're watching people around you accumulate the standard markers of adult life. And you feel this thing that it isn't quite envy, but it isn't quite relief either. And you can never really find the right word for it. So you just pour another cup of coffee and you sit there with your 1,000-yard stare. So, what nobody prepares you for is how long that middle part can be. I mean, because it just, it just keeps going. That's what it feels like anyway. And you keep waiting for the part where it resolves or something, like resolution, where you can look back and go, oh, so that's what all that was for. Great. Okay. And that part takes a very long time to arrive. That's if it ever arrives. Some days I still think it hasn't for me. And I've been doing this for around 40 years or so. So, yeah. So, at some point, you start doing this unintentional accounting thing. It just sort of happens, I guess. Usually it's in the middle of the night when your brain decides that sleep is for people with 401ks. And the accounting thing, it's not about money. It's more like an inventory of all the things that exited your life while you were busy being committed to your so-called choices. Relationships, for example. Dating while broke and obsessed with your artistic endeavors is, well, let's just say it's not an advisable experience. Because, among other things, you are essentially asking someone to believe in a vision with no guarantees or stability whatsoever. You're asking someone to place a great deal of faith in the unknown. And some people will, for a while, because it can be a little exciting, and I think that kind of creative passion is it's attractive, especially when you're young, right? But it does get a little less attractive when it becomes a lifestyle, especially when you're over the age of 40. So I had a relationship once where the person I was with finally said very calmly that she needed someone with a plan. And I remember thinking, you want to make the gods laugh, tell them your plans. And at some point I had this realization that life is what happens when you're making other plans. And you know, then there's the whole issue with time, where you just never feel like you have enough of it. Specifically, you don't have enough of it to do the work that you're trying to do. And just to hold together the basic, I guess, infrastructure of being a person. So yeah, sleep of course becomes negotiable, and your health becomes something that you will, you'll just deal with that later on. I learned that even in this lifestyle, later, that's doing a lot of heavy lifting. From a certain perspective, later is basically the support wall of the whole structure, because you are ultimately hoping to get somewhere with all this. And then there are your friends who you watch making very different choices with their lives, and you see the distance that opens up between you and them, which it isn't anything hostile or you know, anything like that. It's just, I guess, geographic in a way that has nothing to do with location, because you're just living in different worlds now. They've got mortgages and marriages, and, you know, school pickups and things like that. And you've got things like artistic opinions and a really, you know, debatably interesting internal life that doesn't pay you particularly well. Now, I'm not saying this isn't really a comparison. I'm not saying that my way was right. I want to be clear about that. I'm just saying that it was mine. And that distinction matters more than I can adequately explain, except to say that owning your mistakes feels categorically different from inheriting someone else's life and then making their mistakes inside it. So, somewhere in the middle of all this, I started paying attention to something that I'd been vaguely aware of for years, but I just never really allowed myself to just sit with it, which is that suffering isn't the price you pay for making the wrong choice. It's just the price. Full stop. Regardless of which road you take. So, the Buddha allegedly figured this out around 500 BC, which suggests that this wasn't exactly a new problem, even back then. The First Noble Truth of Buddhism is basically states that life, all of life, involves suffering. That's pretty much it. That's the whole thing. And I remember the first time that that actually really hit me and registered, actually as a felt reality, not just a concept. And it left me thinking, oh, so there was never a version of this where I got out clean. Good to know. Would have been useful earlier, but whatever, okay. Because, the story that I've been telling myself, and I think a lot of people tell themselves, is that the suffering was specific to the choice you made. And that the people who took the safer road were somewhere over there, comfortable and intact, not laying awake doing the unintentional accounting routine. And some of them are fine for the most part, anyway, but a lot of them are just, they're suffering on a schedule that they're enslaved to. Just with, they've got better furniture and bigger bills, maybe a slightly nicer car. The thing that shifted with me, or for me, I guess, wasn't some dramatic epiphany or anything like that. It was more like a gradual loosening where I realized that the desperate need for the whole thing to mean something and to resolve into some narrative that justified all of it, that need was really its own kind of trap. Maybe even heavier than the original one. And look, I'm not sitting here in lotus position or doing downward dog or whatever, telling you that I've got all this figured out. I still have plenty of days where not even the coffee helps, and that 1,000-yard stare extends well into the afternoon. But I've noticed that there's something that happens when you stop white knuckling the outcome. When you just let the thing be what it is. I don't know. I guess I tried to choose a life that it felt like mine, where I was fully prepared to accept the consequences, and it cost what it cost. And I guess somewhere in the middle of all that, without meaning to, I was actually living it. And, that's not nothing. I mean, it's next to nothing, but I digress. So, this is the part that's hard to explain without it sounding like I'm trying to make the whole thing seem like it was worth it in retrospect, which I don't know, maybe I am, but I'll try to be honest about it anyway. I think that there's something that happens when you've been living close to the edge for long enough in your life. And I don't mean anything, I'm not implying anything poetic by that necessarily. I just mean close in the ways that keep you up at night. You stop being able to afford the kind of distance that, or distance from your own life that a lot of people maintain without realizing it. I guess you could say it's like the buffer between, or the buffer of comfort and routine that lets you live slightly in the future most of the time. You know, where you're always fixated on what's next, what's ahead. So you're never really quite here now. I didn't have that buffer. For most of my adult life, I've been pretty much required to be exactly where I am, because where I am was usually demanding my full attention just to navigate. And I think somewhere in that necessity, something happened that I didn't plan for. I was actually present for my own life in a, I guess, this is the only thing happening right now kind of way. So I didn't have a, in a sense, I didn't really have a choice but to be present. And that taught me how to be more present over time. And sometimes it was, and it still is, terrifying. But that's where most of the actual living turns out to be. I guess that's the place where, you know, being in that place, that's where a song would come together out of nowhere at 2 a.m. in a room that was too cold and smelled like old coffee and cigarettes or whatever. And I had a lot of moments where that allowed me to just, I guess, notice things. Things that are typically overlooked or, I guess, missed by most people. Like, I don't know, something, it could be something as simple as just the quality of light on a random afternoon when nothing was happening and I wasn't anywhere I was supposed to be. And it was somehow inexplicably enough. Those things happened because I was able to be there. I was fully present with no particular future to mentally escape into. I don't know how to, I guess, quantify that against a retirement account. Maybe it doesn't balance out. You know, maybe the math just doesn't work. And I've been rationalizing this for 35 years or whatever. But I was there for it. And it gave me what I needed to do what I had to do. And I think that counts for something. Even if I can't quite describe what that is. So here's something that I figured out pretty early in life. Death is coming for everyone, at any time. You don't know when it's going to be. And it's probably going to be inconvenient when it happens. Of course, you know, this is not breaking news or anything, I realize. But it's the kind of thing that most people, they know this intellectually. And then they proceed to spend the rest of their lives actively trying to not think about it. Which, of course, creates all kinds of problems under the surface throughout your life. And, you know, but it is understandable because I know it's a lot to carry around. However, when you do reach that point, if you do reach that point where your mortality finally actually does truly sink in, you know, when you really sit with the fact that this is happening, and the clock is running with there's no extensions available, no appeals process, it does something to your priorities. At least that's what it did to me. And I know that it's not normal for a kid to have an awareness of mortality like that. But for whatever reason, I did. And I started thinking about the actual situation that we are in as human beings. You know, we're on a speck of rock that's spinning at absurd speeds through an incomprehensibly large amount of nothing. And on this rock, for reasons that nobody has satisfactorily explained, we developed consciousness, which, depending on how you look at it, that's either the greatest gift in the universe or it's some kind of terrible cosmic error. And so, given all of that, spending the one life that I was issued being terrified of judgment, arranging everything around what other people, you know, arranging everything I was going to do around what other people thought and expected of me, that started to seem like a strange allocation of the time available. Because I came to this conclusion that there's no award for being the most accomplished and flawless, I guess, successful corpse in the graveyard. I mean, in all likelihood, nobody at your funeral is going to mention your job title with the reverence that you were hoping for. And, you know, wherever you spent your life, carefully building and, you know, maintaining whatever it was that you were trying to do, none of that is coming with you. Now, I'm not saying I've got the mortality thing all worked out. I don't really, but I think understanding it early enough in life, it informed me of some decisions. That, and you know, that might be the one thing that this unconventional life gave me that I couldn't have gotten any other way. You know, I guess something closer to clarity about what it was actually worth being afraid of. And it wasn't failure. That's not really what I was afraid of. For me, I was afraid of getting to the end of my life and realizing that I'd been waiting the whole time. And by waiting, I mean waiting to feel ready to do the thing. Waiting for the version of life that was supposed to start once everything settled down, once all the ducks were lined up. Except the thing is, everything never settles down. And that's not meant to be a cynical observation, that's just accurate. So, you might as well just be here, for good or for bad, in the unsettled version, which is really the only version there is. And doing the thing that feels like yours, even if it costs whatever it costs, even if the math doesn't really work out, and the financial picture remains, as I previously noted, impressionistic. Well, I guess that's all I've got today on that topic. So, with that, maybe go make some coffee or something, or maybe notice what the light is doing, or whatever your thing may be. It won't last long, but then again, never, neither will anything else. So, you're in good company. Thanks so much for listening.